Grass is fine if you've got a cut or 4 feet and stand in the mud. But we've got two and teeth to chew. Don't give us none of that vegetarian stew. We're carnivores and we ain't ashamed. The reason's simple, it's in the refrain. We feed you.
Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 15 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Here to Help, about three organizations that underpin the success of Pacific Northwest wheat farmers. First up is Sam White, Chief Operations Officer for Pacific Northwest Farmers Cooperative, discussing his company's merger with Cooperative Agricultural Producers, known as COAG, effective June 1st. The new cooperative, which will be known as Pacific Northwest Farmers, will have a footprint that stretches south to Genesee, Idaho, and north to Spokane. Next up, listen in as Janice Cooper, Managing Director of the Wheat Marketing Center, provides an update on modernizing the Portland-based organization's look. Finally, Jerry Robinson, Manager of the Washington State Crop Improvement Association, addresses the burgeoning number of wheat varieties his agency must certify for varietal purity. It was less than 10 years ago, in 2008, that Genesee Union Warehouse and Whitman County Growers merged to form Pacific Northwest Farmers Cooperative. The combination that became COAG goes back further to 1998, with the combination of three cooperatives based in Roselia, Oaksdale, and Fairfield. Reflecting a similar consolidation trend throughout agriculture during the period, what was once five cooperatives 20 years ago will officially become one on June 1st. I asked Sam White, who as Chief Operating Officer oversees the cooperative's day-to-day operations, how many employees would be part of the merged cooperative and whether the consolidations would mean any loss of jobs.
The two companies will have approximately 140 employees when we are officially combined. I would think that we will have more. I know when we merged Genesee Union Warehouse and Whitman County Growers, we had approximately 40 employees. Today we're sitting closer to 85 to 90 just with PNW. So I see this as a chance where we'll be able to maybe be more employees and touch more bases.
Now, how will the merger change your operations, or will it?
Good question again. We're working closely with the COAG employees today, trying to figure out so that we can hit the ground running June 1. I'm not sure that we'll see a big change in what the farmer would see on an operation side. We hope to, the doors will be open at all the offices you've seen before, all of the warehouses. So I don't think from a grower standpoint that he will see a big operational change. There might be some stuff behind the scenes. We'll definitely, we were co-owners in the McCoy grain facility, and so that we'll be working a little closer together there. But I think from a grower standpoint, they won't see any major changes.
Any marketing changes?
We'll see. Again, it's a work in progress right now. I don't foresee anything that would be a negative to a producer. It should all be in the positive side.
Describe the merged cooperative's footprint.
Fairly big footprint. PNW was more to the south. COAG was more to the north. But we will be running from, we'll have facilities that we handle grain and pulses in Lewiston, Idaho, all the way up north to Spokane, Washington. Some of the other co-ops cover more acres, but we will be right up there in the size with other co-ops on the larger scale.
How will members benefit from the merged cooperative?
Through the combined bushels and that we'll be able to handle, I think that we'll have a bigger market presence and be able to offer into the market. So hopefully our growers will be able to pull some value out of that. And then on the pulse side, we're hoping that maybe we'll be able to expand our pulse division up north, where we've been doing some but not as much, and that we'll be able to help those members up north as well.
Was there any consideration in changing the name of the merged cooperative?
Oh, yeah, there's always consideration, but when we merged Genesee Union Warehouse and Whitman County Growers, we decided on a name of Pacific Northwest Farmers Co-op that was all-encompassing, and we thought going forward, we didn't want to have to change because we build on that brand, and it's become a strong brand in the marketplace, not only for wheat but on our pulse markets. So in coming together today, we will be known as Pacific Northwest Farmers.
I will personally miss having a COAG based in Rosalia. Managers there were easily accessible, and several participated in Spokane area events where I got a chance to interact with them. Not something that often occurs with managers from more far-flung locations. I remember when I started covering agriculture as a reporter in 1986, when a 2,000-acre farm was considered big. I'd argue the distinction now belongs to farms of 10,000 acres. It appears a 5-to-1 ratio applies to more than elevator cooperatives. Hundreds of Eastern Washington farmers have toured the Wheat Marketing Center as part of the Portland Port Tour sponsored by the Washington Grain Commission each January. Hundreds more from Idaho and Oregon have also made the trek to the organization's headquarters in a converted flour mill located along the Willamette River. Created in 1988, the Wheat Marketing Center provides technical training, education, and research for U.S. wheat farmers and customers, both domestic and international. Janice Cooper has served as managing director of the operation for a little more than a year. She is working to give the organization a new look, beginning with its logo, but more importantly, modernizing what has become a stale entryway. I asked Cooper why the changes were necessary.
The Wheat Marketing Center was created with a strong educational mission. So part of that mission is to educate not only farmers, but just regular people about wheat. So the whole hallway outside of the Wheat Marketing Center is a series of displays on different aspects of wheat, how wheat moves from the farm to the end market, what wheat is used for, different major customers. So the first thing that a visitor will see when you walk up the stairs are these very large silos, like 20-foot high silos of different classes of wheat. And then there are actually wheat plants below each one. That is the main thing that is going to remain substantially the same, because that in itself is the place to start in any conversation. So the fact that there are different kinds of wheat, they have different end uses, and that's really a way to start talking about U.S. wheat and the quality of U.S. wheat across different classes.
Now, technology makes it possible to have lots of interactive types of presentations. Are you going to do anything like that?
Yes, I think that is going to be a key tool that we employ to update and refresh the displays, the ability to have video screens that are programmable, to have maps that that show the movement in some dynamic way, and that even something as simple as a rotating slideshow showing different export elevators, for example, or different groups that have come through the Wheat Marketing Center. So the ability to update and program the displays, I think, is going to really add a lot of value to the Wheat Marketing Center educational effort.
She said an updated display was also important as a way to tell the story of Pacific Northwest wheat to our export customers.
We get so many foreign visitors, foreign customers coming through who are attending our short courses, our technical training courses on crackers or noodles or tortillas and baking. And so I think that is a very good opportunity. And we just get visitors. We have people coming through every week, everyone from school children to FFA groups from different states, farmers, customers, and just people that wander in.
I asked Cooper why overseas companies find the Wheat Marketing Center valuable for developing products for consumers in their own countries.
The Wheat Marketing Center is quite unique in that we have what are called pilot scale production lines. So we have actual pieces of equipment that are smaller versions of a cracker production line that you might see at a Nabisco plant, and that piece of machinery might be 10 times or more larger. So we have a small version, but completely functional version of that. Similarly for Asian noodles, we have a small tortilla line. And so in each of those areas, the participants for the course spend time in a classroom setting where they're receiving information about all of the technical aspects of product development and production, the various ingredients that go in, the options for different classes of wheat and flour blends. And then they take that information that they're receiving in the classroom and do hands-on development and product testing, where they're making different versions of the cracker or the noodle. Then they taste it, evaluate it, decide which one they prefer for their market. And then they look at what blends of flour were used to produce that product. And then they can start talking about buying that wheat from the U.S. so that they can improve the quality of their products they're producing in their plants.
Although the Wheat Marketing Center is primarily designed to serve domestic and overseas milling and baking industries, it does respond directly to challenges facing farmers.
We have a very extensive research capability at the Wheat Marketing Center, and so when farmers are facing a harvest challenge, either high protein and soft white, low falling numbers, or whatever that might be, we have a research capability that can come in and help explain how different wheat can be used in end products, or how to understand the best way to utilize the wheat that we're growing each year.
The Wheat Marketing Center is supported by 7 charter states, including Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, Nebraska, and Colorado. The Washington Grain Commission contributed $267,000 to the Wheat Marketing Center in the 2016-2017 budget. And WGC Commissioner Britt Osmond sits on their board. Please remember, the Washington Grain Commission sponsors a trip to Portland each year, a way for farmers to follow wheat off their farm to the cargo vessel that will take it to market. As part of that tour, there's a long visit to the Wheat Marketing Center. If you pay assessments and you haven't gone already, call the WGC office to get on the Portland list. Transportation, hotel, and some meals are included. Get a look at the Wheat Marketing Center's new logo on our Facebook page. Search for Wheat All About It. Washington State has the highest use of certified seed in the nation. Upwards of 90% of acreage planted in the state comes through the Washington State Crop Improvement Association, a nonprofit that works with Washington State University, the Washington State Department of Agriculture, private companies, and Washington seed growers and conditioners to develop, produce, and distribute certified seed. I asked Jerry Robinson, who manages the outfit, what the seed is actually being certified for.
Actually, we're certifying for varietal purity is the overall scope. By varietal purity, we mean the variety is true to type as described by the breeder. We're also certifying it to be weed-free, that there are certain standards within the field, such as isolation, weeds, other crop, that sort of thing. We have to maintain a certain level as dictated by the WAC or the state rules and actually federal rules.
Now, how many varieties of wheat are you certifying, and how has that changed over the years?
Oh, boy. I think we looked at 109 varieties this past year, 2016. 2008, we were, if I remember rightly, 89 varieties, something of that nature. So we've had about a 40% increase over the last 8 years. And it seems to be going on, continuing on an upward swing as far as new varieties. I know a lot of companies are releasing 2-3 different varieties each year, different classes, but there's just more varieties to look at all the time.
So 109 varieties, that's more varieties than a typical grower can make sense of. Are we going to see more older varieties being eliminated?
Well, I hope so. I'm not real sure. We still have some demand for some older varieties. You take Stevens and Madsen are still out there holding their own. So some of the older varieties will still be, I think, being grown by growers. Part of that is because they're non-licensed or public varieties. But, you know, eventually I think they'll fall by the wayside. But there are a number of the older varieties are actually being replaced with much newer, better varieties.
I asked Robinson who was releasing most of the new varieties now coming quickly to the market, university programs or private companies?
A little bit of both. And there's also collaborations between private companies and universities. So you're seeing a collaborative effort on some cases for new varieties. I think there's two or three of those out there right now that are new varieties that are coming out of a collaboration between a university program and a private company. I would say it's almost on an even par, you know, that each company is releasing several varieties a year, and universities are doing the same. So I don't think there's really one super large increase. Maybe the privates are releasing a few more varieties, but overall, I think it's pretty much even up.
As a manager with decades of experience in the seed business, I asked Robinson how well the new varieties were being vetted before being released.
The university system is probably the most stringent that I'm aware of, or at least that I participate in the fact that it's vetted from quality to agronomics and you know where it's going to be best suited. Some of the other varieties, some from the private companies, are vetted just as harshly, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. And it goes from within the private industry, I've seen it from being extremely well vetted to being several trials and that's good enough. So as a whole, the vetting process is pretty far ranging as far as being vetted as for quality, vetted for agronomics. I think agronomics come in as probably the most vetted aspect of new varieties. I think quality is falling, down a little bit in that line, at least from what I've been privy to at this point.
At a recent Washington Grain Commission meeting, Robinson suggested we may see legumes become the major eastern Washington crop. I asked if he was serious. He laughed.
Actually, I think that here in the Pacific Northwest that wheat will always be king. I have to laugh because this year with the low wheat price and the very high price of especially garbanzo beans and lentils that a lot of growers are switching over from spring wheat or other crops going to legumes because it pays the bills. I think once wheat prices come back up, then, wheat will be king again. It probably always will be, though.
Pacific Northwest Farmers, the Wheat Marketing Center, and the Washington State Crop Improvement Association are three of dozens of companies, cooperatives, and organizations that ensure the success of Eastern Washington farmers by ensuring the wheat they grow is competitive in the world market. These groups aren't from the government, but they are here to help. If you're enjoying this podcast, tell your parents, your children, your landlords, your agribusiness and city friends. Those of you listening today are early adopters. Let others learn from your experience. Pass along a podcast, this one specifically. That's it for episode 15. Tune in next week for another episode of Wheat All About It.
Don't like chemicals, don't like killing. Look in your kitchen, the story there's chilling. Plant food, Windex, mouse bait too. Mr. Clean, easy off, even pet shampoo. You wanna be a hypocrite? Just forget to have the shit. We feed you.